Tim Versalotti is director of the Western New England University poll, a great friend of WAMC's. He's both a professor and a pollster, and he's the best of us, I can tell you that right now. So welcome, Tim. Great to have you on.
Great to be here, Alan.
Okay, so let's start with Super Tuesday results. Astounding, right? I mean, you know, just when everybody thinks they know what's going to happen, they don't. Am I right?
You are absolutely right. This cycle has just been one exciting development after another. Everything got turned on its head. Political consultants are now saying to themselves, why do we exist?
Exactly.
Here you have a candidate who won states that he hadn't visited, that he hadn't set up field offices in, that he hadn't advertised in. Now, it's someone with sky-high name recognition who served two terms as vice president. But if you look at the results from some of the states on Super Tuesday, if you're a political consultant, you're having an existential crisis at some point.
Well, we did learn a couple of things. We learned, number one, that money can't do it all.
That's absolutely right. And absent good poll data, we often use campaign finance reports as a metric for how successful a campaign is. But again, if your candidate doesn't have a clear rationale for running, a clear message, the discipline to stay on that message, it seems that all the money in the world won't offset those deficiencies.
And the ability to put it across. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I was fascinated by the Bloomberg candidacy, but then I watched him on the debates and I said, this won't do it all.
Yeah, I have to say, I hope down the road some folks from inside the campaign provide some sort of insider account, because someone with that kind of executive experience, all those years in the corporate world, was it that he was not prepared or that he didn't feel like he needed to prepare, given his experience as mayor of New York, as a corporate executive, because he came across as someone just very poorly prepared for the experience of debating on national television?
Well, yes, but there's just so much preparation that you can do. It can't change your character. And his character, I thought, was that, I'm not good at this. I'm not going to do this well. I mean, that's what I came away with. I don't know.
It certainly came across. There were moments in the debates where his demeanor suggested he thought, do I really need to do this? Is this really part of how you become president? And everyone has to make peace with the trade-offs and sacrifices of running for office, even someone with his background and resources.
Let's also talk about the concept of endorsements. Now, virtually every living, breathing Democratic politician in Massachusetts was quite clear that Elizabeth Warren was their person. Everybody just assumed she'd walk away. She came in third. What happened?
There are a lot of potential explanations for her finish, and that was another of the big surprises on Super Tuesday. The pre-election polling showed that it was a very tight race between Warren and Sanders. And then, seemingly out of nowhere, Biden comes along, fueled by the momentum of his victory in South Carolina, and also helped by the withdrawal from the race of other moderate candidates who may have been sapping votes from him. But I think there's more to it. I think because if you look at the exit poll data, Biden even did better than Warren among women and educated women, women who you would expect would be in Warren's corner. And one reasonably speculative opinion is that people were thinking about electability, and however much they wanted to support Elizabeth Warren, agreed with her issue positions, were very impressed with her qualifications and her preparation, they just didn't see her being able to defeat Donald Trump in the fall. And those voters then gravitated to the individual they thought might have that chance. Some went to Bernie Sanders, but I think a fair number went to Joe Biden as well.
Well, I know an awful lot of people who voted for Biden. They figured he was the best of the moderate choices. They walked in there and they just pushed down the Biden, button. And that turns out to have been the way it was done. I mean, yeah. Biden won Massachusetts.
Yes. And it also is a reminder for those of us who do pre-election polls that when we ask people their preferences, it's a good idea to ask the strength of that preference. What is the likelihood that you'll change your mind between now and election day? Because when you look at the Super Tuesday states, not just Massachusetts, but across the states, the late deciders were going to Biden by 50% or more. Sure. And so that's saying that people who had expressed previous preferences may not have held them that tightly. And when push came to shove in the voting booth, they went for Biden. Again, gauging the strength of the attachment to a candidate can be so important when you're trying to get a sense of what's happening in the electorate.
So in the end, it's all about Trump, isn't it? It's all about Trump has created such a sense of danger to so many people that they want him gone. And, you know, there was some polling that I saw on CNN which suggested what's more important, beating Trump or voting for the candidate you think would be the best. And beating Trump became the number one thing.
It's true. In multiple states, we've seen that sentiment. And there also seems to be a desire for at least some stability in our political system and a focus on which candidate is best positioned to deliver that stability.
So how much do you think the coronavirus plays in all of this? You know, Trump is such a lying liar. I know that to be a fact, said as the Washington Post, which has listed all of the lies, that when he talks now, I don't think people take him all that seriously. Do you have any sense of that?
I think people are looking to the experts on something as serious as the coronavirus, and it does pose a real wild card in our election cycle. It's very difficult to predict how it's going to shape things because we don't know what the prevalence is going to be, the degree of human suffering that's going to follow from that in our country. And if it appears that this government is poorly prepared, if this government is ineffective, if people feel I do not feel like the government is looking out for me or my family, then President Trump's going to pay a pretty significant price for that.
Well, he said the whole thing was a hoax, a Democratic hoax. Then he brought all his people together, his public health people, and they assured everybody one way or another that it wasn't a hoax. Does he pay a price for that?
I think at some point people begin to simply dismiss that and say, well, that's just political rhetoric. Bring us experts who can give us science-based information and good advice on how to prepare for this. But at the same time, if there's a growing sense of insecurity and instability in the country, naturally the president gets held responsible for that, whatever the actual level or extent of responsibility exists. Folks look to the person at the top. As Harry Truman said, the buck stops there.
And really so quickly, because we're out of time, the stock market crash of that huge crash of the other day, followed by an uptick when the president got the Fed to lower the interest rates, and then the next day back down again. What do you make of that?
It's unsettling. These wild, unpredictable swings, the chaos on Wall Street. People think about their 401ks, their children's college funds, and it's just one more element of life in America in 2020. Again, that sense of insecurity and uncertainty can't be good for an incumbent administration.
Tim Bersalotti, always wonderful to talk to you. I have so much respect for you and your views. Your students are very lucky to have you as their professor. One of these days I'm going to come over there and sit in on a class and see you spin your magic. And thank you so much for being with us.
We will roll out the red carpet. Thank you, Alan.